3 years has shared with us her decades' research into political assassinations and abuses of power in this country. Her program relates the news of the week to emerging evidence about the conspiracy which allegedly maintains by force its control over the legislative and judicial processes in America. And now, here's May.
Good afternoon. This is May Brussel in Carmel, California again. This is April 28th, and this is Dialogue Conspiracy 195. As I mentioned last week, cassettes will be available of these shows to order. There's somebody making arrangements with me now, and we hope to get them out and have a table of contents, and you can obtain cassettes to play at home in case you missed the program or want to look up information. These programs roll along pretty fast. I mention a lot of names. Sometimes I forget to fill in the background of these particular people. I assume that you're well read and versed, and maybe I take too much for granted. I've been on this conspiracy radio program for 4 years, and there's so many listeners that have followed every week, and many of them for 4 years, in fact, with their own reels and tapes, that I sometimes feel that I'm being unfair and I'm speaking to them who've been following it like a course every week. And those that are new and listening for the first time sometimes might get lost until a few weeks if they have the patience to bear with me to follow the way that I put the news together and relate it to my past research or past political assassinations. For those of you who are new listeners or who haven't listened in a long time, the format of this show is to take the news of the week and show how it pertains to past political assassinations and to illustrate the people that are in power today that were received their power through the assassination of President John Kennedy. Specifically, I mean President Gerald Ford, our unelected president who became president after Richard Nixon stepped out of office, and Gerald Ford was a member of the Warren Commission. And I'll read you a few comments by a well-known researcher, Mr. Jostin, about Gerald Ford. I do want to announce, before I get into that, that there is this conference. It's called Conference Conspiracy in America. It'll be at UCLA, May 16th, 17th, and 18th. The cost is $6 for the general public, $4.50 for students or unemployed. P.O. Box 9662, Marina Del Rey, California 90291. If you want to go down to Los Angeles for information on assassinations and conspiracies in the United States, you'll hear such speakers as Mark Lane, George O'Toole, Rusty Rhodes, Peter Dale Scott, Lewis Tackwood, William Turner, Lake Headley, who did a marvelous investigation on the SLA, Tom Hayden, David Harris, Don Free, Jane Fonda, myself, and others will be there talking about conspiracies in America. I do want to talk about something which has been in the news that I think is important in terms of conspiracies and assassinations, and that is the operation which surfaced last week called Operation Talon Vise, T-A-L-O-N-V-I-S-E. I don't know where this particular name, Talon Vise, comes from, but Operation Talon Vise is the plan to bring into the United States members of the dreaded Phoenix program from Southeast Asia. The rationale behind it is that these men are so unpopular because of the kind of an operation that they ran, paid by American money in Southeast Asia, that they should find haven in the United States. And that same logic of bringing in people that were with Batista in Cuba, and there were very many big discrepancies in the living standards, the prostitution, the gambling, the torture of Batista's army. And many of those Cubans fled to the United States. Among them was Frank Fiorino, Frank Sturgis, later to be discovered at the Watergate Hotel sabotaging American elections, allegedly loving his democracy so much, but helping to sabotage our elections and planning demonstrations in Miami. And Frank Fiorino's name came in the news again this week. I'll read you an article, but he's a refugee from Cuba, and there are many like him that have been responsible for bombing of firehouses and illegal activity brought from Cuba to this country. And many immigrant persons from organizations such as the Solidaris, and many people brought in through the Reinhard Galen operation of Hitler's Nazi spies brought into the United States in the Southwest formed the backbone of the agents that created that phony profile of Lee Harvey Oswald. So we'll get more of the same when we bring in from Vietnam, from the Phoenix program, these people who carried on the dreaded operations there. They will begin, like the not all members of the white Russian community, but some who helped fabricate stories about Lee Harvey Oswald and helped Marina Oswald to fabricate these stories about Lee that had no basis in fact, and thereby conceal the real motives for the killing of the President of the United States. These people are brought in by the Nazi spy operations. I described in a book called Project Paperclip by Clarence Lasby. It's a very important book about the importation of Nazi war criminals into the United States. One such war criminal, it was Walter Dornberger, who became the head of Bell Aerospace in Fort Worth, Texas. I've mentioned his name on the show many times. Howard Hughes allegedly sent out a memo that Mr. Robert Mayo revealed several weeks ago saying, keep the war going in Southeast Asia, it's good for helicopters. So in addition to American-born by Howard Hughes, you have Nazis, Germans coming over, making a lot of money, position contracts on warfare industries. We imported Nazis by the many, many hundreds, and then they went directly into the universities, into the news media, into the Pentagon to help write the Warren Report or send the historians to write the Warren Report and to sabotage what really was a country that had a constitution, didn't live by it all the time, and had a long way to go in terms of its racism, its treatment of the blacks, the Indians, but a country which has been completely saturated with persons that were unwanted in their own country because of terror. And the penalty of depriving other people of a chance to have food or shelter or livelihood. And then when the revolutions came and they were thrown out, they came in this country, and now they're used by the CIA in this country. So the agents from the Phoenix program are being brought into this country. And don't forget that the head of our Central Intelligence Agency is Mr. William Colby. He was appointed the head of that agency following the removal of Mr. Richard Helms after the Watergate scandal. And besides, I think Mr. Helms was ready to move over to Iran and get ready, as I said last week, for the Middle East operation. But any program that was such a total failure, that was so hated or dreaded, that was so disgraced, America's a Phoenix program, should have the person behind that Phoenix program removed from office as a war criminal, if not tried, removed from office. And what happens? He's brought home with the approval of the Senate overwhelming vote to become head of the Central Intelligence Agency. So the head of the dreaded Phoenix program was brought home to America, and with his expertise, you can expect Phoenix operations at home. The first real push of the Phoenix operation in the United States, I maintain, was the kidnapping of Patty Hearst and about 35 kidnappings that immediately followed the Hearst kidnapping. And there have been bombings and arson by intelligence agents and weapons supplied by the Pentagon, paying domestic agents who were by nature antagonistic, maybe the anti-war movement, or blacks, and filled with racism and hatred, or hippies and counterculture. These people were to be crushed in the way you do it with domestic counterintelligence, such as was done in Southeast Asia. Mr. Colby became the head of the CIA, and the Patty Hearst kidnapping was the first official American kidnapping, and I believe it was funded and protected by the CIA and FBI. Now, all persons knowledgeable about the Phoenix program, I say all, I should say most persons, do agree in analysis that it did more harm than good. There is hardly an article claiming that the Phoenix program did anything good at all, and it was very questionable. It was directed by Americans for 5 years before it was turned over to the Vietnamese. It was strictly a terror campaign that was equaled or worse anything that the Viet Cong could have done. The families who helped the Vietnamese, the North Vietnamese, were singled out for harassment and torture and assassination. I think Mr. Colby said at his hearings before the Senate he was responsible for somewhere between 20 and 40,000 deaths in the Phoenix operation. The program was designed to neutralize the Viet Cong infrastructure. Now, neutralize the Viet Cong was like the counterintelligence program in the United States that the FBI and CIA were carrying on and are carrying on here, to neutralize the Black Panthers, the anti-war movement, the Indian movement, the Chicano rallies, the activists, women's movement, Black Muslim, Black Liberation, the Socialist Workers Party. These people were to be neutralized at home. The memos say, and in Southeast Asia, they were to be neutralized. President Thu used the Phoenix program to eliminate or, in quotes, neutralize his political opposition. And again, I bring up the parallels between Southeast Asia and the United States, just like there are parallels between Nazi Germany and what's happening in the United States now. And they're not coincidental. They're the same names and people, and there are ways to smoke them out if Congress wanted to. But in Southeast Asia, Premier Thu, President Thu, eliminated or neutralized his opponents. In America, John Kennedy was neutralized. Senator Robert Kennedy was neutralized. Ted Kennedy was neutralized. George Wallace was neutralized. And they made way for Rockefeller and Reagan, or one of them will take over. But I think Reagan is the man to watch because of his links to Defense Industry Security Command and the funding for Muscle Shoals, Alabama, which a writer, Penn Jones Jr., claims goes to support some of Ronald Reagan's campaigns in California and his present activities. Major political figures in Vietnam were jailed. Minor political figures were merely assassinated, and the cause was always described as that the Viet Cong did the assassinations. This is no different than saying that Oswald was a Marxist or Sirhan Sirhan went to the Du Bois Society, that he was interested in the left, or saying that Castro sent killers over to revenge his possible murder by the CIA. We have the murder of Martin Luther King, Malcolm X, Medgar Evers, Whitney Young, and now we hear of assassination plans to kill Black Minister Cecil Williams up in San Francisco, or Jesse Jackson from Chicago. And the murders will continue to neutralize every organization that begins to organize people to understand and act upon their particular oppressions. The Vietnamese army officials used the program of Vietnamization as terror apparatus set up with CIA funds and extorted money, and the use of the FBI to go into communes and to bother the lesbians or the gays or the young hippie types, or to break into homes where a girl, Virginia, had short hair, and they said that's Patty Hearst, another van has long hair. Looking for Patty Hearst has allowed the American officials, the FBI, to bother approximately 24,000 people, when all the time I think it was an FBI and CIA operation. Now, the district chiefs in Vietnam who ran the programs were appointed from regions other than where they served. They came in, and this is what I called in the John Kennedy assassination the migratory birds. People that were involved in the assassination were brought in from another area and had a strategic job, then moved out later. The Vietnamization there isn't any different than the political assassination of the United States. And Colston Westbrook of the CIA, who was trained in highly secretive work in Southeast Asia and trained in behavior modification, returned from Vietnam to go right into the Vacaville prison, while California prisons were having so much violence, and also they were spawning new Black leaders such as George Jackson and Eldridge Cleaver came out of the California prisons. Colson Westbrook went right from Vietnam to Vacaville and founded the Black Cultural Association with Donald DeFries, who was formerly working for the Los Angeles Police Department. And then Russell Little of the SLA moved out from Florida, and William and Mary Harris and Angela Atwood came from Indiana. And many of the people that were involved in the CIA SLA were migratory birds that came from other areas, had all met in the Oakland area, Oakland-Berkeley area, to come down on radicals and, as I say, anti-war people, the Venceremos, and the Prisoners Union, United Prisoners Union, so that they can completely be infiltrated and observed now on the basis that they're looking for SLA. The Vietnamese program, bringing in of these people from the Phoenix program because they are so hated in Vietnam is like bringing in persons who escalate the Cold War, who want to get back because the Tsar was kicked out of Russia, or the former policeman of Batista who've been so instrumental in our political assassinations. Those people that are selected to reside in the United States will be used like many of the other emigres. Now, I'm not saying all emigres, but the ones that were used, that had a particular hatred, many of them were useful to these past political assassinations, and I think that bringing them in here, this operation Talon Vise, is a big mistake, but it will be done on the guise of saving lives of these Vietnamese officials. Now, if these people killed 40,000 people that they admit just to get Mr. Thu elected, I mean, that's all that it really amounted to, and to spread terror in the village, why should we be protecting them in this country from anything if they did things that were wrong, if we sent money that wasn't supposed to be used for torture, if we sent money that wasn't supposed to be used for throwing people out of airplanes? They should stay there and take their punishment before the courts, like the Nuremberg trial. But in Germany, again, we brought many scientists and professors over here that didn't go on the dock at Nuremberg, that settled in Fort Worth and Alabama and Georgia and Florida and all over around the United States. So this is just a continuation of a policy since World War II to saturate the United States with these particular officials and then use them later for very subtle or not so subtle political purposes. I saw a poll this last week. The day was April 21st, the Gallup poll, which I don't have too much confidence in. It said the public values an honest president. And the same article in the paper gave a big build-up to Gerald Ford. There was a two-page article of him in the paper Monday, April 21st, showing Gerald Ford sitting at his desk behind the rug, his half-sister maid, very homely, and a genial, happy person. This article is synchronized with it. It says, honesty, trustworthiness, responsiveness to the will of the people are the qualities that the California public values most highly in a president these days. They want him honest and trustworthy and above average intelligence and plain and simple taste, 72%. And this is fits the description of Gerald Ford, who everybody loves, Mr. Homebody, but not nearly everybody. And then I think of Gerald Ford's work when you talk about honesty and trustworthiness. And I never get over the fact that that man sat on the Warren Commission. And I remind you of a book that was published by Joachim Joosten in Germany. And he sent out a flyer of it dated December 1974. This was just 3 months ago. He has this book. The price is $25 because he has to mimeograph it. But it's a book about Gerald Ford. It's called Gerald Ford, Cover-Up Artist Par Excellence, How He Misused His Power and Prestige to Shield the Assassins of President John Kennedy and Cover Up the Dallas Coup d'Etat, a public indictment before the High Court of World Opinion. And Joosten, remember, was the man who wrote Oswald, Assassin or Fall Guy, one of the first books to come out on the John Kennedy assassination, because he was a reporter in Germany who left the time the Nazis came, went through all that suffering, realized that this assassination of Kennedy's could be a duplication of what Germany went through when certain leaders were killed. He flew out to Dallas, went back to Germany, and wrote Oswald, Assassin or Fall Guy. Now he has a book, Gerald Ford, Cover-Up Artist, and he says, so you thought the man who succeeded Nixon was honest, forthright, candid, and trustworthy as they come? Well, you were wrong. Take a hard look at Gerald Ford's record on the Warren Commission. He was number one accessory after the fact in the assassination of President Kennedy. He planted evidence in Life magazine of Oswald's diary and of his book, The Portrait of the Assassin. He surreptitiously built up false witnesses against his better knowledge. This was for his book. This is what I was talking about. He's going to have on his radio show. His second big lie was that he hid under the rug and swept the evidence of a conspiracy of America's leading pathologist, Cyril Reck, blames Gerald Ford for covering up much of this conspiracy. Ford's third big lie, that Oswald was a government agent, and Ford knew it. Lee Harvey Oswald worked for the CIA, and he worked for the FBI, and no one knew this better than Gerald Ford. Three criminal presidents in a row, LBJ, Nixon, and Ford. Just read this and weep. If you're interested in ordering this book, if you have $25 left after taxes, write to me or on the bibliography that I've mailed out to many of you. I do have Justin's name on there in Germany, I believe, under Oswald, Assassin, and Fall Guy. And you can order the book on Gerald Ford and his job in covering up from the Warren Commission. I want to read a brief article. Most of you saw it in the paper just this last week. No CIA link to J.F. Kennedy's death. Mr. David Bellin, after 13 closed sessions of the commission headed by Vice President Nelson Rockefeller, found that the Central Intelligence Agency found no, the commission found no credible evidence linking the CIA to the assassination of John Kennedy. Now that's signed by David W. Bellin of the Warren Commission. 13th closed session. Remember, so far the witnesses that have come there representing the John Kennedy seemed to be John Kennedy assassination seemed to be Dick Gregory and Ralph Schoenman and Robert Groden, and they showed the Zapruder film, which the Warren Commission had seen over and over again. I thought they had only seen the slides, but further research refreshed my memory that they had seen the movie. And then Dick Gregory got up and said he, Howard Hunt, was in Dallas, Texas, which he was not. And right away, David Bellin threw out that evidence, and they have found no credible evidence that the agency was involved. Keep in mind that I've written to them, but I've never received an answer from them, and I've sent information and articles, including a affidavit from the National Archives stating that Lee Harvey Oswald was an agent of the FBI and CIA, and it was the same memo and information that Gerald Ford used for his book on the allegations that Oswald worked for the FBI, but he deleted the part about the CIA. I saw an article in the paper this last week about Marina, not about Marina Oswald, it was about a Mata Hari woman from Cuba, and it reminded me of my research on Marina Oswald. The article dated April 20th, 1975, Associated Press Wire, describes a self-described Mata Hari who was quoted in the New York Daily News as saying she lived with Castro for 4 months and plotted his assassination and filched papers from him for the CIA. She returned to Havana and took information from Castro, and the agents that she worked with when she came back were Mr. Frank Sturgis and E. Howard Hunt of Watergate fame, who used this particular woman. Her name is Marie Lorenz, and she's the daughter of an American woman and a German ship captain. You see, the German thing comes through this assassination loud and clear, and it would be interesting to know if this ship captain is one of the Nazi agents that Reinhard Gehlen brought over in our CIA, or whether he came over with Project Paperclip. But his daughter was used by E. Howard Hunt and Frank Sturgis to try to kill Fidel Castro and give the information to the CIA. Now, I was the first researcher in the country to say that Marina Oswald was an agent of the CIA used to frame Oswald. Not much different than what this woman was doing. She was planning the killing of Castro. She lived with him. She said she lived with him 4 months. She didn't marry him or have a child by him. But women agents are used to attack and kill their husbands or to plant evidence against them. And Marina Oswald was the only person that linked Lee Harvey Oswald to the Walker shooting or having a rifle. And in return for this, she received her citizenship. And I think that the link of E. Howard Hunt and Frank Sturgis to the use of women to kill for the CIA is important because of the role that Frank Sturgis and Frank Fiorini had in the John Kennedy assassination. They deny any role or any links to the John Kennedy assassination. E. Howard Hunt had an article in Penthouse last month or this month denying any role in the Kennedy assassination, getting very perturbed by the suggestion. But then on the other hand, he admits that he lied about certain things in his book on the CIA and the compulsive spy. And E. Howard Hunt said that he lied before the Senate Select Committee, I believe, 3 times. And I'm sure he lied before a grand jury. So E. Howard Hunt is not one to not lie. He's been trained to lie. In fact, the Penthouse article has a long section on the CIA by Harrison Salisbury and the very intensive training they have to tell lies. So the use of Sturgis and Hunt with this particular woman and the use of a woman who's living with a man to plan his death, his murder, reminds me of a particular woman, namely Marina Oswald, who was used by the same people that were related to the operations of E. Howard Hunt and Frank Sturgis in the period of 1962-63. And these links could be investigated if the proper people we're interested in investigating him. I sent a letter to David Bellin, the same gentleman who says there's no link of the CIA to domestic activities in the United States or to the John Kennedy assassination, and I've read this on the air before. It was a letter to David Bellin, to the Warren Commission, and he asked Mr. J. Lee Rankin, and he wrote this in January 1964, that he wanted Marina Oswald to have a polygraph test because he said if under polygraph examination it were shown that Marina Oswald had not been truthful in her testimony, it could throw an entirely new light on aspects of the investigation. And that is the same Marina Oswald that lied approximately 40 times to the FBI, changed her story many times. And I wrote to David Bellin 8 years after I had done my research on Marina and said she was in fact telling lies and there is a new light on the John Kennedy assassination. But he ignored that and continues to tell us after 13 weeks of secret testimony before the Rockefeller Committee, there is no link between the CIA and the John Kennedy assassination. But beyond any doubt, there's no doubt in my mind that the links are there, and they're heavy. Just like I said in 1972, there were links of the CIA to the Watergate and to secret operations that were illegal in the United States as against their charter. And there's no way that they could worm their way out of that, and they're exposing a little bit, but they're still destroying their tapes. There, I do want to make a comment about Arthur Ford surfaced. Maybe he's on the radio last week. I've never heard him on the radio. A listener in New York is sending me some tape cassettes of the conversation. He was on a talk show, Long John Nettle, in New York City, April 18th, 1975. Arthur Ford was a co-author of the book Were We Controlled? I mentioned that book on shows. I was doing extensive research into it last year before the SLA story broke. It's a very important book. The pseudonym on the book is Lincoln Lawrence. It was published by University Books, and Mr. Ford said that it is now out of print. He said they're worth about $100 now, each book. It was published in 1967. On the Long John Nettle show, he discussed the assassination of John Kennedy, and he attributed his murder to a circle of 14 Nazis. Now, that's an interesting point. I could include specific Nazis involved in the John Kennedy assassination, but he says there was a secret group of 14 Nazis that were involved. And his conclusions on the assassination are very close to mine in the sense that he ties it into Navy intelligence and the use of Nazis inside the USA that were responsible for the murder of President John Kennedy. Mr. Ford lets the CIA off the hook, which is convenient, but it would be hard for 14 Nazis and Navy intelligence to get away with these conspiracies and massive amount of murders and for the CIA not to discover, the FBI to discover them. So I feel there is collusion of the agencies together in assassinations and conspiracies. As I say, last January and December 74, I was working on the book Were We Controlled? It's about the use of brain implants and hypnotism and mind-altering with regards to the political assassinations and conspiracies in the United States. I think the two big stories in the United States, the most important stories in the United States to end fascism or to not let matters get worse or more out of hand than they are now, are the investigation of the Hughes Empire and the Hughes Medical Foundation and the use of mind control and implants and brains and hypnosis for murder and hiding the actual people behind the murder, using victims as the middleman to effect certain changes in control or future brain surgery or more weapons or more police and more assassinations. The electrode implants, the psychosurgery, the hypnosis are very important in violence. You've heard me talk about them many times on the show before. I think that the study of Patty Hearst kidnapping again would be interesting in terms of Vacaville, or the behavior modification that Nancy Ling Perry had. Allegedly, I heard that she went to Washington and was trained there for a special time session, and Colson Westbrook, and we don't know how many other people were involved. We know that Patty Hearst said on her first tape that she was all right, but she had a cold, but they had a medical unit, and she was receiving medicine, pills, and so forth for her cold. And it would be interesting to know which pharmacists supplied those and what pills were given to her, or whether these were to alter her personality or subdue her until they could get her into a position they wanted, that she would go along with them on their charade without surfacing or running away. The book, Were We Controlled, refers to, again, to Navy research, the funding of Navy intelligence, to the researching of Dr. Delgado at Yale University, and who's done many brain implants. And this book also goes into the hospitalization of Oswald in the USSR and Ruby's hypnotism. And co-worker Dr. Weitzel, who worked with Dr. Delgado at Yale and was active, or is active, in this kind of work. I was told by Sherman Skolnick in Chicago that Dr. Weitzel is a first cousin of Dorothy Hunt, CIA agent, wife of E. Howard Hunt. The mind control story and the servicing or the admission that uses dead are the two big stories. But people, when I got calls from New York City, people were interested. People were interested in, I'm sorry for the interruption. Somebody walked into the studio here and they didn't know I was on the air. I apologize. We won't erase the tape. We'll just keep going. And he got out. I made a face and he ran out. The Hughes story of the Hughes Medical Foundation and the use of Navy intelligence for brain research and electrode implants is important. And as I say, people in New York City were interested and excited in the fact that this particular gentleman was on the air, Arthur Ford, and many of his conclusions paralleled the conclusions that I have come to after my research of the links of Navy intelligence, such as Richard Nixon, and the Hughes people and the ITT, the Nazis, Navy intelligence, to the programming of zombies for the future and violence and assassinations in this country. Those are areas that there's enough article and documentation around to go full-scale. Congress should spend a year or two and demand that money be spent to find out where these 642 Nazis went to when they came to this country, what their occupation is now, what they've earned since they arrived here after World War II, how they're related to war industries, where they teach, what subjects they teach, and there should be an intense effort to locate. You can't locate all of Galen's spies from Eastern Europe and around that are all over the world the CIA used for violence or political assassinations, but we could pinpoint the 642 Nazis that Clarence Lansby talked about in Project Paperclip. The pinpointing of 14 Nazis is an interesting number that Arthur Ford came to, but I can't pinpoint 14 because I have many other names that would go on that list in addition to 14. Last week, I talked about the CIA memos that were sent to Howard Baker after the Senate Select Committee closed shop, and I thought I would read a few more of those with you for the remaining 10 minutes, a few more pages from these memos, because, again, we have the Hughes Corporation and ITT represented by Mr. Bennett, the Mullen Associates public relations firm in Washington, D.C., that was responsible for covering the activities of Mr. Hunt Liddy after the Watergate arrest. They represented the Hughes Empire in Washington, D.C. After the Watergate, Mr. Bennett came out to California and works for the Hughes Empire right now. And the information I'm going to read, in case you didn't hear the show last week, is a continuation of information sent by Mr. Colby, Mr. William Colby, director of the CIA, to Mr. Howard Baker, Senator Howard Baker, vice chairman of the Select Committee on Presidential Activities. Now, this was sent June 28, 1974, but last week I read to you that the CIA was contacting the lawyers for the Democratic Committee and toning down their investigation. They were cornering Senator Sam Ervin so that he ran and closed shop. In 1973, and a year later, a letter and information comes out to Mr. Baker, which should be exploded wide open. That's why I'm reading it on the air, but so far remains hushed. And I think that all of you who tape this or want cassettes should write to congressmen and insist that some of this information be on the table so most Americans can realize what's happening. Last week, I closed off with regards to taping Mr. Cushman's office. Mr. Cushman is now head of the Marines, just like Richard Helms is ambassador to Iran. These people were promoted in jobs, even though they concealed information from the Watergate Committee, from the FBI, and worked with the White House to hide the involvement of the Central Intelligence Agency in the Watergate affair, in the Dr. Lewis Fielding offices, and in other matters. As I read last week, Mr. Colby signed his letter saying that this information may look like the employees and officers of the CIA were involved in Watergate or Dr. Fielding or subsequent cover-ups. In such case that it appears this way, I may feel it necessary to take an appropriate public position to assure the conclusions from my investigation and also, he says, the results of other investigations that are also known. So Mr. Colby is just about daring them to get off his neck in that letter. Well, here's an article about taping of Mr. Cushman, and again, I read to you that Richard Helms ordered that the tapes be destroyed after he got a letter from Mr. Mansfield from Congress about wanting Watergate tapes that were relevant to the investigation. Mr. Helms, Director Helms, left office 1 week after Senator Mansfield's letter requesting the evidentiary material be retained, and Helms ordered the tapes be destroyed. And he's still in public office as ambassador. He ordered them destroyed in spite of the fact that Congress asked him to turn them over. And they said that the destruction, the only other destruction for which the CIA had any record was in January 21st, 1972, when tapes for 1964 and 65 were destroyed. Never before had there been a destruction of all existing tapes. It should be noted that there exists a separate taping system for the Office of Security. Colby's report goes on that January 1973, the destruction pertained only to the recordings of room conversations. Remember, chronologically, the rest of the Watergate was in June of 1972. So 6 months later, the destruction pertained to recordings of room conversations. However, on Richard Helms' instructions, his secretary destroyed his transcriptions of both telephone and room conversations. The evidence indicates that among these telephone transcriptions that were destroyed by the acting head of the Central Intelligence Agency, in spite of the Congress asking for them, were conversations with the President, with Robert Haldeman, with Mr. Ehrlichman, John Ehrlichman, and other White House officials. Mr. Helms testified that such conversations were not Watergate-related, but unfortunately, there isn't any means to corroborate this testimony. There are several references in the tape to a Mr. X. The CIA has not produced the actual logs for examination. We have been informed that there are gaps in the existing logs. The circumstances surrounding the transcription of rooms and telephone conversations of former Deputy Director Cushman are bizarre, to say the least. This is Mr. Colby of the CIA saying the circumstances about the conversations on the telephone and in the room of the former Deputy Director Cushman are bizarre, to say the least, and yet Mr. Cushman was promoted then to become head of the Marines. Mr. Colby's report goes on, when Cushman's safe was cleaned out in December 71, they claimed they made a search for the original transcript shortly after the Watergate break-in, and it wasn't found. We have a search shortly after the Watergate break-in of June of 72, another search of May 73. But in February of this year, hand-delivered to Senator Baker was a significant document. It was a transcription of a portion of John Ehrlichman and Mr. Cushman's telephone conversation that they recently discovered that they said it didn't exist. And it was discovered that a third search for Watergate-related material was located in the same file as the Cushman Hunt transcript. The document is especially significant in that it quotes John Ehrlichman as saying that E. Howard Hunt was working for the President of the United States and that the CIA was to give Hunt carte blanche. This, of course, substantiates the CIA's claim that Ehrlichman made the original call with regard to the CIA's assistance to Hunt. Now, remember, Mr. Hunt was working on the Chappaquiddick affair. He was interviewing people up there, I said last week, at behest of Howard Hughes' interest, whatever that would be, with Mr. Mott. Mr. Hunt was working carte blanche for the President of the United States, and the areas that served the President of the United States in 1972 were that 20 to 26 million votes that would have gone to George Wallace went to the President, that Ted Kennedy was run out of the election in 1972 by an accident that happened with his car when Mary Jo Kopechne was murdered, and Mr. Lasowitz, working with E. Howard Hunt, Mr. Caulfield, and all of them were heavily involved in the Chappaquiddick affair. But Mr. Hunt had carte blanche for anything from the CIA. The committee goes on, the report goes on, the committee has received much testimony over the past months dealing with Howard Hunt by CIA personnel and CIA materials regarding the psychological profile of Daniel Ellsberg. Howard Hunt was involved in a wide variety of domestic undertakings with the use of CIA equipment. You see, a wide variety of domestic undertakings. Now, that doesn't mean Watergate is one and Ellsberg is two. Now, that's hardly a wide variety of domestic. Remember, domestic is illegal for the CIA. Hunt was the head of Domestic Operations Division from 1962 to 66 for the CIA. The years when he was writing for Allen Dulles, the years when John Kennedy was murdered, the year when Allen Dulles became on the Warren Commission, the time period where a phony diary was produced that Lee Harvey Oswald never wrote, that Gerald Ford wrote on the tales of, that gave the leaks to Life magazine and used those adjectives produced by the agents of Allen Dulles. So it'd be interesting to know illegally Howard Hunt was not only working and involved with the CIA, but a variety of domestic undertakings with the use of CIA operation. Now, this doesn't mean overseas, overthrowing Guatemala or Iran or trying to get the president of Panama or trying to kill Castro. He was involved with CIA equipment in domestic undertakings. They give an example of the Fielding burglary and the profile of Daniel Ellsberg, and they give the investigation of the Chappaquiddick affair. And it said the question arises as to whether the CIA had advanced knowledge of the Fielding break-in. While the CIA previously belatedly acknowledged some of the support it provided to Hunt, the CIA has continuously downplayed the extent of that technical support as well as specific approval and detailed knowledge. The CIA's assistant to Howard Hunt began in 1971, July 22nd, when Hunt met with General Cushman, now General of the Marines, used to be Deputy Director of the CIA. Cushman requested physical disguise, phony identification. This meeting was tape recorded by Cushman, by the CIA's Technical Division Service they were called in. They met with Hunt on separate occasions. They used CIA safe houses, leased for clandestine meetings, provided CIA equipment, which we've all heard about, heel lifts for a limp, fake glasses, phony driver's license, identification cards, tape recorder and typewriter case, cameras, New York telephone answering service, which actually picks up in Washington, D.C., reconnaissance flights. The technician who dealt with Hunt testified he received the approval of the CIA for each and every request of Hunt from his supervisory official. And Hunt informed him early in August that he would be introducing a second man into the operation for disguise and false identification, and that was G. Gordon Liddy. Testimony and documents revealed against, contrary to the testimony of high CIA officials originally when Watergate was investigated, that Hunt's request for a New York backstop telephone, a telephone with a New York number, in reality was answered by Washington CIA switchboard. They had an answering service in Washington, D.C. There was a backstop telephone request that was about to be implemented. This was revealed in 71 in a memo, but they actually had the relay numbers called. And previous CIA testimony said that it didn't exist. Recent CIA testimony evidence established the CIA created a special file on Mr. E. Howard Hunt that is still not available, called the Mr. Edwards file, and was maintained outside the normal CIA filing system. The committee's request to see it has not been granted. Despite the testimony established, it was turned over to Mr. Colby of our Phoenix program. It's called the Bigot List. Isn't that interesting? Recent testimony indicates there's a bigot list, in quotes, and sensitive material, and Mr. Edwards' file has never been turned over. I didn't do the whole program on the CIA memo. We have some more. Maybe I'll read a few more pages next week. But our time is up, and I think that the relationship of Mr. Colby, Gerald Ford, Richard Nixon, the Phoenix program, the political assassinations should be gone into before we open up the John Kennedy assassination and follow these leads and clues and force the Central Intelligence Agency to come out with more information so that we can find out how many domestic operations they have been conducting in the United States. Well, my time is up now. Another week has rolled around. You take care of yourself. This is Dialogue Conspiracy for this week, and I'll see you next week from Carmel, California.
This has been Dialogue Conspiracy with political research specialist Mae Brussel, who for 10 years has been researching the facts behind political assassinations and conspiracies in this country. Dialogue Conspiracy originates with KELRB FM in Carmel, California.